Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia? Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
all right, the great Dar Williams there singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Rivertown Kids off the album Tomorrow's Children, the Grammy-winning album Tomorrow's Children. This is Harvey Wasserman. We're back for another hour of the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Got a great show for you today with Jill Stein, the presidential nominee from the Green Party USA. She did well. Jill, are you with us?
Thank you, Harvey.
All right, Jill. And you are in Boston.
Yes, I sure am. Home
All
of
right.
the first revolution and maybe the second.
First American Revolution, anyway. So
yeah,
really. Before we proceed here, we have some news. I'm looking at the front page of the New York Times. The suicide of this young man, the hactivist Aaron Swartz, has really generated a tremendous amount of news coverage, and it's an interesting story to me. And we'll talk about this, Jill, as we go ahead. But the persecution of this fellow really reminds me a bit of what's being done to Bradley Manning. The so-called liberal Obama administration has been extremely prosecutorial and dictatorial in many, many ways on these civil liberties and civil rights cases, and very disturbing to me. Have you followed this case at all with Aaron Swartz?
No, I'm sorry to say I haven't,
okay,
but
so,
no, it is certainly a it's a common theme. It's part of the prosecution against our civil liberties, against people who stand up for our civil liberties. Bradley Manning, Julian Assange, for that matter,
Right, and of course
the NDAA. I mean, there's just this general broad attack on our civil liberties, on privacy, on our rights to protest, on our rights to free speech, on the freedom of the press.
Right.
It's this
ridiculous.
Is a very disturbing, clearly established trend on the part of the Obama administration. Good Lord, even the nomination now of John Brennan, the advocate of torture and rendition and drone warfare, this would have been a war criminal who should have been prosecuted, is now being nominated to actually head the CIA. This is, again, I think, one more sign that we cannot afford to sit back and let politics as usual and the current political establishment masquerading as if it were the friend of everyday people. We just cannot sit back and let it take us all over the cliff.
Yeah, I agree. Now, let me read this real quickly from the New York Times here. Foremost among the debates, this is about Aaron Swartz, foremost among the debates being reheated, one of which has already grown in the wake of larger and more daring data breaches in the past few years, is whether Swartz's activities as a hacktivist were being unfairly defined as malicious or criminal. In particular, critics as well as Swartz's family, in a former statement, have focused on the federal government's indictment of Swartz for downloading millions of documents from the scholarly database JSTOR, an action which JSTOR itself had declined to prosecute. So here we have the Obama administration, the Department of So-Called Justice, persecuting this young man who's in his early 20s, for God's sakes, just for downloading documents whose owners didn't even care if they prosecuted. I mean, what is going on here? This is just completely inappropriate, off the wall, dictatorial, and no excuse for it.
Exactly. And what a shame that this brilliant young man, had to pay with his life for this, outrageous actions on the part of the Obama administration.
And since we're on that theme, well, we've had a number of cases come up now in the medical marijuana world, where people with actual licenses, people with illnesses, for God's sakes, in states like Montana, mm-hmm. which where medical marijuana is legal, are being given long prison sentences by the federal government while following state law. And we've had instances where people are licensed to run medical marijuana clinics, are licensed to grow their own medical marijuana, and are suddenly hit by the federal government, in following the federal law. But what the hell, you know? I mean, Obama has said he's got a bigger fish to fry. Why are these small fish, being persecuted at all?
Especially after his promises, you know, in the first election, he promised that he would leave medical marijuana alone, and then he did a 180. And in Colorado, for example, the homes of patients with cancer, with cerebral palsy, you know, with very serious medical illnesses. These are patients who have prescriptions from their physicians to be using medical marijuana. Their homes would be surrounded by police in full riot gear, you know, complete with batons and face masks and shields, surrounding the homes of these desperately ill patients who are simply, you know, following prescribed medical treatments.
And, yeah, it's sick. It's,
you know,
really
basically accuse them of breaking the law and threaten to put them into jail. This is diabolical. This is not what democracy looks like. This is why it's very important to stand up to this politics of fear that tells us that this is better than some, you know, some potential worse monster. We don't have to settle for either of these monsters. You know, we need to stand up. They won't stand up for us. We've got to stand up. And I think, you know, we've just seen this happen now in the fiscal cliff deal, where we were told that this was the president, you know, during the election, this was the guy who was going to stand up for everyday people, who would tax the rich, who would protect Social Security, and who would stand up for a fair economy. And aside from the betrayal on medical marijuana, this president has now turned around once again. Anybody having a deja vu here? You know, this again was the kinder, gentler, you know, the hope and change candidate who has now suddenly become the absolutely shameless proponent of Wall Street rule once again now that he's in the White House.
Well,
and I think
we're talking with Jill Stein
time.
Here. The
What's that?
We're talking with Jill Stein here, the Green Party candidate for president. I think that there should be a different word besides postmortem. How about pre-vitality? I mean, we're, you know, you're still obviously on the case, and we want to, I want to go in and give some analysis of your candidacy and of the Green Party campaign. But let's finish this theme. We're talking about the callers, by the way, to 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888 if you want to comment on this. We're talking about the abuse of power and the legal prosecutions being conducted by the so-called liberal Obama administration. We started off talking about Aaron Swartz, the hacktivist who was prosecuted really brutally by the federal government just for downloading documents whose owners declined to prosecute. This was strictly a Department of So-Called Justice federal intervention here, led to the suicide of this brilliant young man who contributed RSS and a number of other things to the life on the internet. Now we're talking about medical marijuana and people in states where medical marijuana is legal who are being seriously prosecuted by the federal government, by the Obama administration. Barack Obama himself having boasted of smoking marijuana as a young man. He was asked, if he inhaled, and he said cleverly, well, that was the point, wasn't it? And yet here he is prosecuting for people under federal law for doing things he did, which are now legal under state law. Let me read this. This is an article from the Huffington Post here about Chris Williams. Chris Williams, co-founder of Montana Cannabis, was found guilty on September 27th on 8 counts of marijuana and related firearms charges, despite his state's medical marijuana law. These charges carry a mandatory minimum sentence of more than 80 years in prison, mandatory minimum sentence of more than 80 years in prison, and exposed the grave human consequences resulting from the existing disparity between federal and state laws. Now, this disparity would not be of any relevance whatsoever if the Attorney General, Eric Holder, had kept to the promise of his boss, Barack Obama, and not prosecuted medical marijuana people, medical marijuana growers, users, or merchants in states where medical marijuana is legal. This article in the Huffington Post is by Rebecca Richmond Cohen. Now, Chris Williams had reason to believe his risk of federal prosecution was minimal following the release of a 2009 memo by the Justice Department stating that the federal government should not focus federal resources on medical marijuana growers and patients who comply with their own state laws. But in March 2011, federal agents raided Chris's grow house during a statewide crackdown across Montana. Now, this statewide crackdown was not done by the state of Montana. It was done by the federal government. There are 20 states, including the District of Columbia now, where medical marijuana is legal. We have two states where it's outright, flat-out legal, in Colorado and Washington State, and yet the federal government continues to bust people. 80 years minimum sentence, for God's sakes. People don't get that for murder in this country. At his trial, Williams was prevented from invoking his compliance with state law as a defense against the federal charges. As a result, the jury heard a partial and profoundly distorted version of Chris's story, and on this basis convicted him of 8 counts. I mean, my God, this is insane. Now, I did read also that there was a medical marijuana patient in Montana who was arrested and who died in custody because of his arrest already. And Jill Stein, Green Party candidate for president, what is going on here with the marijuana laws in terms of the Green Party?
And let me just add, by the way, to your beautiful description of the absolute insanity on the part of the Obama administration with regard to marijuana and marijuana laws, because not only are they viciously prosecuting legal users, patients with prescriptions for medical marijuana, the administration also declared after full legalization was passed in Colorado that they weren't going to be bothered, enforcing marijuana laws now in Colorado, that it was completely legal. So, you know, go figure. This is just absolute madness. I think, you know, it reflects that the inmates are running the asylum in the White House and in the realm of establishment politics, where it's some crazy mix of lobbyists and special interests and, religious fanaticism as well, that's sort of arbitrarily, being enforced here. And it's a completely destructive and irrational mix of policies. In contrast, what the Green Party would do would be to change our drug laws, basically to call a halt to this this lost, expensive, inhumane war on drugs. That war has been lost, completely lost, and it's an extremely counterproductive and costly war, not just in terms of money, but in terms of lives and young people who go to jail for long periods of time for simply the recreational use of a drug which is less harmful than tobacco and alcohol, legal drugs. So what the Green Party would do would be to call off this war on drugs, to make the issue of substance abuse and dependency a public health matter, not a criminal matter, and to be allow it to be handled in that realm, starting with the legalization, the full legalization of marijuana. Simply decriminalizing marijuana is not effective because it maintains the black market, and it is the violence surrounding that criminal underground market which is responsible for the biggest health and safety threat associated with marijuana and actually with all illicit drugs, which is the danger, of a violent crime. So that goes away when we legalize marijuana. And the reason marijuana is so important in the general picture of violence surrounding illicit drugs is that marijuana is the workhorse. It is the financial workhorse for the entire underground illegal drug industry. And to look at the scope of that violence, you know, it's important to look at what's happening in Mexico and along the Mexico-U.S. border. 60,000 people have lost their lives in approximately the last 5 years. These are innocent people who are caught in the slaughter of the crossfire, and including elected officials who dare to stand up to the drug mafia. Now, what sense does it make in the world that 60,000 people are losing their lives to defend a drug policy that makes no sense and on which the president has basically declared surrender in the state of Colorado? Why should people continue to lay down their lives for a drug policy that clearly does not have enough importance to the White House to even be consistent about it?
Yes. Now, let's talk. We're talking with Jill Stein here, the presidential candidate from the Green Party. Obviously, we're not declaring this campaign over in any way, shape, or form. I want to give recognition to Richard Flor, F-L-O-R. He died in August in the Las Vegas Bureau of Prisons medical facility. He was 68 years old, and I'm 67, so was just a few months into a five-year prison sentence for running a Billings, Montana marijuana dispensary with his wife and son. Now, this was a business. He was openly doing business here under the law that allowed him in Montana to sell cannabis. His wife got 2 years in prison for bookkeeping, and his son got 5 years for running the Billings dispensary. And this man has died, Richard Flor, at the age of 68, on federal charges. Despite the fact that he, Richard Flor, was suffering from dementia, diabetes, hepatitis C, and osteoporosis. And they clearly the medical marijuana was helping him, as it does many people, with pain treatment and symptomatic treatment. And in some cases, actually, there are people who believe that cannabis can help treat cancer. I'm not going to comment on that one way or another, but there is some evidence. So this poor man was treating himself legally under the laws of Montana, running a dispensary, running a business with his wife and son, and is busted by the feds, dragged off to a medical facility in another state where he dies. And, you know, we have at least, I read an article on Alternet the other day, there are at least five people in the federal system who are in prison for life for marijuana-related so-called lawbreaking. I also want to say that I visited, in the last couple of years, the Oaksterdam University in Oakland, California, and I met with Richard Lee, the founder and the owner and operator of the Oaksterdam University. This was a very, very substantial place, a big building in downtown Oakland, which God knows needs it, and they were training people and students and caregivers in the uses of medical marijuana, which is legal in California, and were running a facility that was of great economic and cultural value to the city of Oakland. And the feds, and Richard Lee is in a wheelchair, very sharp guy, very, you know, on top of things, funded the whole thing himself. It was a business and an educational institution, and the feds just went in and busted it. And but went to Richard Lee's house, for God's sakes, and ripped up, you know, some very important rare strains of cannabis that he was growing for his own treatment and for experimental purposes. And so this is still going on. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why we need a Green Party, why we need an entrenched opposition. I mean, we're close now. The governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, is talking about decriminalization, which, as you say, is, you know, not sufficient. I think we're all reasonably certain that if Colorado and Washington show a profit, if the states make money taxing legalized marijuana, that many, many other states are just going to jump in and start legalizing it. And what you're going to have is a huge conflict between the so-called liberal Obama administration, who continues to bus people even to the point of killing them for what's legal on a statewide basis. So this to me is obviously pisses me off, and I just can't really abide reading this stuff and not getting extremely angry.
Can I jump in? Two things. One, don't get angry, get even. And we can talk more about getting even. And in fact, it's more than getting even. It's about, you know, taking back our lives and our future and justice and democracy. We can't do one without the other. And we are the operative word in making this happen. We are the ones we've been waiting for, as Alice Walker and many others have said, and fixing this outrage against medical marijuana, against our civil liberties, against our health, against our planet, against a green economy. These things are so interconnected that the, you know, the solutions to them converge, and it's reason, I think, to take hope and to take power. They come together, hope and power, and reclaiming a peaceful, just, green future go hand in hand. And I think that trend is very much established. There is a rebellion going on that is alive and well out there in the grassroots. You won't hear about it on corporate media. You won't hear about it from the establishment parties. But remember, one out of every two Americans did not want to vote in that last election, and they had to be arm-twisted and scared and bludgeoned into it. Even so, there were fewer voters by many millions than had voted in the prior election. People were desperate for alternatives, which is why the political establishment and the corporate commission on presidential debates kept us out of it.
One thing we did move forward this year is that you did have a debate with some of the other so-called minor candidates. But we do have a caller, and we'll get to that. I want to talk about the nature of the campaign. But we do have a caller, Peter from Massachusetts, where we're talking with Joe Stein, also Green Party candidate for President. Peter, what do you got for us?
Well, I did vote for Jill because she was a best presidential candidate, but my question is, how can we unite the 99% from left to right to move our democracy forward?
Well, there's a question for you. Jill, you want to answer that?
You know, I think we need a multipartisan democracy. We need to liberate that democracy and break the stranglehold, you know, of big money and corporate power in order to do that. And throughout the campaign, you know, I'm really glad to say that we had many parties converging. We actually worked with libertarians. The Greens and the Libertarians worked together on the debates. Gary Johnson and myself, together with other independent candidates, worked together to help lift that stranglehold, to help break the silence. And we continue to seek collaboration, to seek ways that we can work together to make that happen. That said, you know, I think it's important to be clear about how we move forward. And I think we do need to move forward free of the, you know, of the stranglehold of big money. And that means not running on corporate money and not allowing corporations to either run our government, run our political parties, and run our campaigns. So, you know, I think it's very important that we build broad coalitions around that.
Well,
for the moment.
Peter in Massachusetts, you want to jump in here and add anything with what Joe said?
Well, I know that there's been conversations with, Mark Meckler of the Tea Party and Professor Lassard from Harvard and other, you know, independents and things to move forward to move to amend campaign to get corporations out of our constitution, their money out of our elections. So that's something we can organize that 99% to work together to do.
Absolutely. And we need social movements doing their work on the ground, which is really important. And in the case of elections, we also need a political voice in the process. It is because of the repressive rules right now that work to silence political alternatives. It is a hard fight to get heard, and I think it's important to work together in that fight. The Green Party emerged in the last election as the party in which that fight is going on. We were the biggest vote getter by a factor of 10 to 1 compared to all the other non-corporate political alternatives. So I think it's very important for us to use the fighting power that we have on the ground in the Green Party to help open the way for the other non-corporate, people-powered parties to be heard, to have a voice in this process, and to fight together to open up the system.
Well, let's talk about the interface here. You mentioned the Occupy movement. Peter, you're welcome to jump in. How do you see the interface between the Green Party and the Occupy movement?
Well, I think they both have the same goal, which is to overcome that Wall Street empire that controls our federal government. I think the Greens and the Occupy folks need to attract the moderate voters, the independents, the libertarians. I mean, the people united cannot be defeated, but right now we're all going in different directions. So the Greens would be great leaders in doing that, but I think they need to, like Jill says, form coalitions with all these other more moderate groups and moderate voters to work together on one or two common ground issues, and that'll bring people together.
Jill, what do you think about that? Jill Stein?
Well, I found that every time I had a chance to really talk with libertarians, that it's not hard to move them because they, too, agree that we should not be bailing out Wall Street, that corporations should not be running our elections, and that we need a solution to climate change. That, you know, and likewise, I would say for advocates for marijuana legalization, you know, or for growing hemp. You know, they realize we need a stable climate in which to grow this. We need to, you know, have a water supply that hasn't been fracked out from under us or, you know, evaporated in the warming of the climate. So I have found libertarians to be very interested in the green agenda when they actually have a chance to hear it. And especially among young people, I found it was very, people would get very concerned about the broader agenda when they actually have a chance to hear about it.
Well, of course, Gary Johnson, the libertarian, Gary Johnson was a libertarian candidate for president, right? He was governor of New Mexico. He is an advocate of legal marijuana.
Yes, he is, but he's also an advocate for hands-off about climate change. He does not want any government interventions that we should not allow. We should not stand in the way of the fossil fuel companies from continuing to run the show. They also oppose efforts to get money out of politics. So, you know, there are some real fundamental differences in our agenda, and I think it's very important that we be able to be honest about them. And when we do have a chance to actually discuss this agenda and what we need to move forward, we do have common ground that transcends those party labels, and it tends to move people behind an agenda which is not only about ending drug wars, ending war, ending corporate control, but it's also about maintaining a green future. And
all
I think
right.
Every bit is fundamental.
Well, our immediate future is to take a break here. We're with Jill Stein, Green Party presidential candidate. And we're going to talk more about the election and what the impact of the Green Party has been. Peter in Massachusetts, you're welcome to stick with us. And we'll be back in just a few moments.
Plants, oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams. Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. New plants, oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams. Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. Oil spill, meltdown, flooding, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam.
All right, cool. for Zootopia with the great Dana Lyons of Cows with Gun fame. We're talking with Jill Stein, the presidential candidate for president for the Green Party this past election. Jill, I'm really happy to have you with us. You know, people, after the campaign is over, people tend to forget. What do you think the Green Party accomplished this time in the Green Party candidacy? And then we're going to go to Bob in a minute in Los Angeles. But tell us, Jill, what you feel you accomplished by running for president.
You know, I think we put the Green Party on the map, really, as the real voice of political opposition, as the voice of resistance. That is the electoral opposition. There are, you know, there's a social movement. There are many social movements which are part of the opposition. And we provided an electoral and political voice for that opposition, which is a critical part of fighting back because, you know, in my view, politics is a framework that unites us across the universes of people, peace, and the planet. And it's really important that we now not allow ourselves to be subdivided into our various struggles. And the Green Party was the biggest vote getter. We got about 500,000 votes almost. That's was about three times as big as our last vote count. And I think it was a real step forward in the face of just an incredible escalation of the barrage of big money and the control of big corporations over our elections. And
very good. Very good. And of course,
we gave an agenda that could really move us forward, a Green New Deal, making public higher education free, downsizing the military, and moving to a Medicare for all health care system that would save us trillions of dollars. Right now, we are on a trajectory to lose it all, and people are seeing that again in the aftermath of the election. We're losing it all faster than ever, but we don't need to. We could have it all if we stand up and make it so.
Very good, very good. Bob in Los Angeles, you want to chime in here?
Yeah, hi, Howard and Jill. Howard, I saw you a few days ago. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. You're mistaking me for Howard Zinn, but it's Harvey Washington.
No. Howard, you were in Santa Monica. You gave a talk on the nuclear issue. Remember?
Yes, I did.
Right. As soon as I walked in, I ran into you. We talked. I told you that I'm going to be having a radio show on PRN soon. And anyway, also, and Jill, I believe I saw you when you were in L.A., Los Angeles, and Santa Monica. They showed the film Groove, and I spoke to you briefly. I believe that was you.
Bob, it's good to have you on. What can you give us today for Jill and the Green Party?
Okay, I want to talk about a coalition of all the parties. Gary's talked about it. Latrice talked about it. I will be talking about it on my new show coming up. It's about how can we, and I really believe that if we get a coalition of all the independent parties, maybe call it the Independent Party, and I think we can do something. I'd like to get Jill's take on that.
Jill, a coalition of all the so-called, how should you call it, non-corporate. How about the non-corporate or the anti-corporate or the public parties?
You know, I think many of us are very interested in building this. I will say that it is very labor and time intensive to build coalitions. In many ways, this is what the Green Party has been working to do. And in many states, we're not even called the Green Party. In West Virginia, I believe we're called the Mountain Party. In Massachusetts, we are actually a coalition of the Rainbow Coalition Party and the Green Party. So the Green Party has very much been about the business of building coalitions, and we're very interested in continuing to expand that coalition, particularly to other, you know, public interest groups like labor, for example, which is really hungering for a party, tried for many years to establish their own independent labor party. And I think these conversations are very much ongoing. And this is, you know, I think, you know, bring it on. Let's keep it happening. It's very much a matter that's in the works right now.
Well, now one interesting development in this campaign was this debate between you and three other candidates from the non-corporate parties. Can you talk about that? We've never had that before.
It was very fun and really exciting. We actually had, I believe, four of these debates. Democracy Now! Sponsored three of them, and Free and Equal, which is an independent sort of pro-democracy organization, sponsored actually two of them. So I stand corrected. That was five of those debates right there. And we do indeed, you know, have a lot of common ground. And I think it was so exciting for listeners. People can still see those debates. They are posted still at the website for Democracy Now! I believe Free and Equal still has them. The Free and Equal debates included the Constitution Party as well as the Libertarians and the Greens and the Justice Party. And we do indeed have a lot in common. We actually, I should add, now I'm remembering we had another debate that included the Socialist Party candidates, several of them as well. So these debates never failed to really excite people because they got to hear real issues being aired across the whole spectrum of, you know, of everyday people's concerns, unlike the censored corporate-sponsored debates.
Right. The Romney Obama debates were really a snooze. Bob, and well, let's shift for a moment now and talk about a subject near and dear to my heart, and of course it's at the core of the Green Party as well, which is our movement and our moment here in shutting nuclear power. I have published a piece called Showdown at San Onofre, which has pretty much gone viral at Common Dreams, Alternet, Counterpunch, Huffington Post, FreePress.org, of course, and numerous other websites. And Bob, you were at our meeting in Southern California in Santa Monica. Tell us about what's happening in San Onofre a little bit, and then I'll fill you in, and we'll get Jill in on this.
Okay, you're the super expert on it, but I'm with Gary and you on all the. We want to stop what's going on, and I believe we set a deadline for Easter Sunday to try to put a stop to it, because it's in the works and it should happen. It should very well happen. Those reactors are weak. And the whole system is old as hell, and it just needs to be put to rest. And I think here in California, I think we've got enough people. You met a whole bunch of them at that meeting. It was about 70, 80 people there. And I believe with that coalition of people that's very strong and other coalitions, we can do that.
All right,
I'm with you all the way.
Good. Well, Bob, let me, and Joe, I know you know this mostly, but let me give you some quick detail. We have two reactors at San Onofre, Units 2 and 3. Unit 1 has been shut a long time, since the 90s, actually. Unit 2 and 3 sit roughly halfway between L.A. and San Diego. They're literally on the beach and on an earthquake fault, or numerous, actually, in the vicinity, and very much vulnerable to tsunami, like Fukushima. And these two reactors, the geniuses that run them and own them, decided to upgrade their steam generators, which were shut, and they completely failed. Mitsubishi came in with a mere 50 years experience in the nuclear industry and installed faulty steam generators, complete with radiation leaks. And they've been shut since January 31st. We believe that the towel has unofficially been thrown on Unit 3. We don't think that the utilities think that they can reopen this one, but they do want to reopen Unit 2. And they've asked the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, I love this, to let them operate it at 70% because they're afraid. Even these guys are afraid to operate at 100%. But the NRC has issued an uncharacteristically demanding letter to the owners of San Onofre with 32 questions about the technical aspects of the plant. Now, in California, we're also looking at the California Public Utilities Commission, which has the ability to deny the owners of San Onofre any ratepayer money to pay for this fix-up. And so this is winnable. This is a very, very winnable situation here where you have two reactors that are shut. It's much easier to shut a reactor than it is to it's much easier to keep a reactor shut than it is to shut one that's operable. And I say the odds are very, very good that we can keep San Onofre shut. Now, you know, there are 104 licensed reactors in the United States. All but one were opened in the 80s, 70s, or 60s. These are old plants. And we think that a victory like this one at San Onofre, coupled with the reality that it looks like Crystal River in Florida is probably not going to reopen. We have one flooded reactor in Nebraska, serious problems at other reactors, all at Kewaunee in Wisconsin will shut. We could get under 100 by the end of 2013, and hopefully this will be a domino that falls, and the entire nuclear industry will shut down. Jill, what is the Green Party position, and how's the Green Party working to switch us over to a solar-topian economy?
Yes. I mean, we should decommission our nuclear power plants as fast as we possibly can, especially, you know, now that we have entered the era of climate change and extreme weather. Both drought and flood are a real threat to effectively all of our nuclear power plants because they all rely on tremendous quantities of water to keep them cool. And failing to keep them cool basically transforms them into nuclear bombs. They are essentially intense concentrations of nuclear fissile materials that if they fail to be cooled, they will self-ignite. And it doesn't take much to cause one of these plants to self-ignite. All you have to do is deny it a power supply.
As happened at Fukushima.
Yeah, exactly. And you do that for a couple of hours. It doesn't matter what the cause is, whether it's natural disaster, flood, drought, lack of fuel. If the oil pipeline goes down and you're not generating and then your backup diesel generators fail, you are basically there. You are over the cliff. You have effectively a nuclear bomb in a population center. That's really what
at both Fukushima. It does appear there may have been a fission explosion in Fukushima. We're pretty sure there was one at Chernobyl. And we've been told for decades that nuclear power plants can't blow up, and now we've had four of them that have done exactly that. So I know the Green Party's position.
That's right.
And we
certainly know that there's an enormous quantity of spent fuel which is kept at the site because there's nowhere to send it. So all nuclear power plants have more than their current fuel. They have old fuel stored there, decades worth, more than Fukushima at many of our nuclear power plants. And whether it actually has a nuclear explosion or whether it simply goes up in flames, that's what will happen. I mean, that happens by default. If you lose your power supply, you will evaporate the water that's cooling these spent fuel rods. They get very hot. They start a fire. When they burn, the nuclear fuel goes up in smoke.
Right. And what we do have, Jill and Bob, I think you're still with us there from L.A.?
Yes.
Okay, what we have here now in the United States is in the world, actually, but especially in the U.S., and we're seeing it come to fruition in Germany now, is the opportunity, if we shut these reactors, and we are in the process of shutting many of them. And, of course, the Green Party has been a major player in this. The Green Party is very clear, Jill Stein, on opposing nuclear power and supporting a boom in renewable energy, a conversion to a solar-topian economy, that with each one of these reactors that's shut, a vacuum opens that can be filled with renewables. And in the case of San Onofre in California, we were warned, all these so-called experts, the bloviators, got on TV and said, San Onofre doesn't reopen immediately, we're going to have brownouts and blackouts, and cost of electricity is going to skyrocket, and blah, blah, blah. And none of that happened. And in fact, Germany, the German government has shut 8 reactors. There are still 11 there that are going to shut by 2022. And in the year, when they did that, all the experts got on Fox News and all that other stuff and said, well, if they shut these reactors, there's going to be shortages of electricity and the price will skyrocket. And then actually, after a year in Germany, with these 8 reactors shut, the opposite is true. The price of electricity has plummeted in Germany, and the supply has actually boomed to the extent that there's too much. There's more than they can handle, let's put it that way, on the grid as it's currently constituted. And very importantly in Germany, and this was not, much more than expected, has been a decentralization of control. With the shutdown of the reactors and the income of much more renewable energy, primarily wind and solar, they're finding that communities and even individuals are able to control their power supply to a much greater extent than was even the advocates had thought would happen. Now, Joe Stein, this decentralized control of energy is a major part of the green vision, is it not?
Absolutely. There are so many benefits to moving to solar and wind and geothermal and conservation of energy. We can do it. We can begin to do it rather quickly. This isn't a future technology we have to wait for. We've got it now. And as you point out, Germany is the case study. Germany does not have more sunlight or more wind than New England, for example, yet Germany was getting something like half of its power, I think, from renewable sources.
Well, they did in one particular hour, actually. There was a moment in Germany where they went up to 50% renewables. Generally, it's not quite that high, but it's much higher than it was, in previous years. And clearly, ironically, you have to realize that the corporations in Germany are actually supporting this. You know, after all these years of corporate resistance to the conversion to renewables, the corporations did make a decision in Germany that they were going to go along with this, that the economics of renewable energy were so much better now than nuclear, that they're going to move ahead. Now, Richard, you're in California with 4 reactors. Julie, you have 1 reactor left in Massachusetts at Pilgrim. Is the Green Party working to get that one shut?
Yep. I mean, we certainly are. The prospects are not immediately on the horizon, but a lot of people have been working on that and continue to. And I think the point is, it's not just closing down, nuclear jobs and nuclear energy. It's all about opening up the alternatives. And in doing that, we can not only provide electricity that is cheaper, safer, and more sustainable than nuclear power is. We are running out of uranium along with everything else. But we also create jobs, and we create far more jobs. We create, in fact, 3 times as many jobs in conservation and renewables as we do in nuclear power. And same is true for fracking. It's not simply about denying communities the ability to create jobs. It's creating far more jobs, which are healthier for communities, healthier for workers, and healthier for the planet in the long haul.
Now, Bob, you're in California. I only got a few minutes left. Bob, give us your full name and the name of your show when it's going to be on PRN.
Yes, thank you. The show is going to be on Saturdays at 11 a.m. West Coast time, 2 p.m. East Coast time. And it's going to be about, we haven't got a name yet, but it's going to be something to the effect of solutions for Latinos and other people. I am Latino. The first half hour is going to be in English for all people, especially the defranchised people that are down and out. And we're going to talk about creating a better world. We're going to talk about coalition of all these parties, like Joe said, and I'd love to have either one or both of you on the show to be interviewed on that subject. And
great.
We're going to talk about the activism. We're going to talk about health and spirituality as it applies to Latinos. The second half hour will be in Spanish, and mainly for Latinos that speak Spanish. So I'm excited about that. And in California, we're here, Harvey. I want to stay in touch with you because I might want to have either of you, either or both of you, on these issues.
Yeah, okay. Glad to do it. Okay, Bob, what's your last name?
Elias.
E-L-I-A-S.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for joining us, Bob, from Los Angeles, and thank you for coming to our event in Santa Monica to keep San Onofre shut. We really appreciate your calling in. Let's finish with Jill Stein. Until 11 a.m. Pacific time, I'm told by Matt, is your show. Jill Stein, you got the podium here for about 5 minutes. Tell us more about the future of the Green Party, what you learned from this election, and how you're going to build, and where the Green Party goes from here.
Yeah, so, we are conducting campaign schools around the country, especially in cities that have a strong green presence to start with. We're helping people get elected to their city councils, to mayors, to school committees, and so on, helping greens move up from the grassroots for a, you know, a political alternative, the leading political alternative, the only real established non-corporate political alternative. We're helping get traction on the ground at the same time that we continue to watchdog, to rebut, and to raise the bar at the national level, including at the presidential level, to call for the solutions that are there. I think you know, the political establishment did its best to silence opposition. They were scared because the polls showed and voices out in the streets said people were clamoring for jobs. They were clamoring for a safety net. They were clamoring for real solutions to climate change, for clean renewable energy, for solartopia, for blocking fracking, for blocking the Keystone Pipeline that are, you know, going to devastate our climate and our water supplies and all the rest. There are solutions, and they are there waiting to be put to work right now, a Green New Deal that would put 20-some million people to work while we jumpstart the green economy, make wars for oil obsolete, and put a halt to climate change. These are win-win solutions. They converge and go hand-in-hand with a healthcare system that can save us trillions of dollars through Medicare for All, which eliminates the massive wasteful health insurance bureaucracy. We're calling for an end to the giveaways, the bailouts, $80 billion worth of bailouts going on right now, so-called QE3 for Wall Street, even though trillions already have not helped the problem at all. We need to kiss these banks that are too big to fail goodbye. Let them fail. Let's bail out homeowners and students and create the jobs that we need right here on the ground while we meet our needs here at home, creating a sustainable, just climate and economy for the future. This is doable, and it's in our hands. The choice is ours, whether we are going to lose it all, as we are doing now, or we're going to have it all. We actually can have it all, but it will take us standing up and rejecting that politics of fear that tells us to settle for the lesser evil.
Well, you are the greater good, not the lesser evil. So what is on the – are there any meetings coming up for the Green Party? How do people plug in to the Green Party if they want to get active or stay active with you and this great campaign to green our country and get us the solar?
Go to our website, jillstein.org, and you can plug into the upcoming campaign schools, which are going on around the country. And you can also plug in to the newsletter, which comes out about once every 1 to 2 weeks to keep you abreast of what's going on. So we're calling for jobs, not more bailouts. We're calling for protections against Social Security instead of more cuts, which is what the president has in store in spite of his promises during the election. This is same old, same old. And change Obama have once again devolved into the best friend Wall Street ever had. It's time to think right now to reject that politics of fear and start standing up for the politics of courage. We're the ones we've been waiting for. Go to jillstein.org and join the team, and let's make it happen.
All right, Jill Stein, Green Party candidate for president. Thanks to our callers. Let's make the Green Party a factor and get us a bigger factor than it already is, and let's get us to Solartopia. Thanks so much. It's been another hour of the Green Party Green Power and Wellness Show with Harvey Wasserman. We'll see you next week in Solartopia.
Thanks, Harvey.
Thank you.
Rich, the poor got so. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But don't you know?